Welcome to SportsWise, a podcast about sports and the law with your host, me, Gabe Feldman, director of the Tulane Sports Law Program and co-director of the Tulane Center for Sport. On this episode, I'm joined by Andrew Brandt, executive director of the Jeffrey S. Morad Center for the Study of Sports Law at Villanova, host of the Business of Sports podcast, author of the Sunday 7 newsletter, and columnist for Sports Illustrated. Andrew and I talk about the cheating scandal at Michigan, Deshaun Watson's contract and his future with the Browns, Roger Goodell's extension, the future of NFL broadcasts, the future of Aaron Rodgers, and more. Here we go. Welcome to the podcast, Andrew Brandt. Good to have you back on.
Always a pleasure. You and I go way back, and it's nice to share podcast guests as you have come on mine several times as well.
Let's start with a college football issue, and the college football issue that is sweeping the nation. I think there's a lot going on in terms of the accusations about Michigan. A lot of people, I think, are very much enjoying these accusations for a program that for a very long time has held itself up as the pinnacle of athletic and academic integrity. And so anytime there's a chance to zing Harbaugh and Michigan football a little bit, people jump on it. And so we could talk a little bit about how much of that is going on. But in terms of the specifics of the alleged cheating scandal, can you just talk a little bit from your perspective, starting in the NFL, from both sides, the sort of cheating culture, just how people approach it, given that everybody is trying to do whatever they possibly can to win and to keep their jobs and to get a competitive advantage. And we haven't seen a lot of cheating scandals in terms of stealing signals in the NFL, but Spygate obviously being one of the big ones. But can you talk just generally about how that was handled in the league and how common it was?
Yeah, this is a topic that kind of threw me for a loop when I heard the first stories about Michigan, Gabe, because I'm so used to the pro aspect where I was in Green Bay 10 years and basically we sent, and I was responsible for them, I managed the group, we sent advanced scouts to all the games, obviously completely legal and almost necessary, and teams are sending maybe two people to a game. So again, for people that don't understand advanced scouting, if we're the Packers and in 2 weeks we're playing the Lions, we're sending people to the Lions against some other team this week.
Are the Packers still doing that? That's a question. It doesn't seem like they are. That's a joke. That's a dig at the Packers.
I know. First year in 30 years without a franchise quarterback. Believe me, I'm hearing it all the time.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Go on.
Still doing it, though. Yeah. But not allowed in college. And this is something that I looked up and I heard about it long ago, but it's brought in like in the 1990s as a money saving. Like we're spending too much. It's hard to believe this is 30 years later and we're still having this issue, but you can't do it. And you can't because everyone's trying to save money and we don't do that. And you can't advance scout. Now we have this scandal with this guy, this Army guy who was around the program and paying for tickets for friends or people he knew to sit on the other side. And basically what they're doing is advanced scouting in a way that's more sign stealing. So they want to come up with, when they put up these signs, this is what they're going to do so we can react and our defense can get ready for that play very quickly. Again, it's very complicated, but it's important. And it seems like, you and I are lawyers, it seems like there's circumstantial evidence is mounting around this guy who's no longer part of the program with other people involved and people saying things like, yeah, of course, this is what he had me do and he paid for my tickets and I gave him a report or whatever it is. As you say, the circle is closing in on the leader, and the leader is, I always mix it up, Jim Harbaugh, right? John is with the Ravens. And we'll see how he gets out of this. I think in the background, you have a situation last year where his contract was heightened and he may not have a contract next year. And he's trying to wiggle his way out of those questions. I saw that earlier today. So the noose is tightening, it seems, while, as everyone knows, they're having this magical year on the field, ranked number 2 or 3 in the country. And we'll see where that goes. But doesn't look good on the off-field side for the University of Michigan, which again can engender some heated reaction both ways.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So you mentioned the NCAA's rule, which was created in 1994. So it's bylaw 11.6.1, because of course, if it's an NCAA rule, it has to have multiple decimals involved. But it prohibits off-campus in-person scouting of future opponents in the same season. And as you said, part of the idea was to manage costs, that it's just really expensive for all of these teams. They're not dealing with 32 NFL teams. You're dealing with, you know, multiple hundred football teams and Division I level. And also to promote equity for programs that couldn't afford to send the scouts. The idea that it's unfair if Michigan can send 10 people to watch their future opponents and Arkansas State can't afford to send anyone. But it's another one of those NCAA rules where you look at it and say, is that really what's preventing Arkansas State from competing with Michigan? Is that Michigan's able to send advanced scouts? It's just one of the, and some of this is not the NCAA's fault. It's just a massive rule book and they're not able to change every rule at the same time. And so some of them are vestiges of the old days. And then part of this is also tied into the fact that there are no microphones or speakers in the helmets. And this I found fascinating, that there is a company that has made the speakers for the in-helmet communication technology called CoachCom, which provides coaching headset technology for almost all of Division I. They developed a headset device years ago. Grambling and Southern have used it. But the argument as to why colleges are not using it across the board and why the NCAA just generally doesn't allow it is because of liability issues, that they're afraid if they insert that technology into the helmet, it's going to void the manufacturer warranty on the helmet, which is going to expose them to additional liability for head injuries, which I just found fascinating that but they can't collaborate with the helmet manufacturer to figure out how to do this up front. And I'm not sure how, like, the NFL is able to do this and high schools are able to do this. And so go ahead.
And what we end up with is, everyone knows watching college football, especially the big teams, is like they're holding up these huge signs, which sometimes have a dot on them or a picture of someone or a picture of a celebrity.
Yeah.
And that's supposed to tell you. To me, is, can't you steal those signs? Can't you watch TV film from 3 weeks ago? And when they held up a picture of Britney Spears, they ran that play, unless they've changed the Britney Spears play. It does seem a little bit like we have focused so much, you and I, especially on the emasculation of NCAA when it comes to NIL and when it comes to transfer portal and with this changing world that we're living in, everyone calls the Wild West. And now it's, wait a minute, what about this other stuff?
Wild West. There's two wilds.
Okay.
It's not just the Wild West.
Since last year we added a wild?
Yeah, I think there's two wilds now.
Okay. It seems like this one is, we're back to the original criticism of the NCAA was just anachronistic, old rules that don't seem to work in today's modern age of sports. So we're back to that. And again, I don't think we should excuse cheating if it's cheating. And listen, I've heard a lot of stories about Harbaugh because he coached at my alma mater for a while, Stanford, while he was extremely successful. Just quick story. I remember being back there talking to the football staff. And I said something like, yeah, Harbaugh, he's crazy. Or no, they said, hey, Harbaugh, yeah, he's crazy. And I laughed, crazy. No one laughed. They're like, no, crazy. Like, not laugh. We joke about crazy, but like crazy. There's something about that guy that has success, but it's just a little off.
Yeah. And it's still not clear how much he knew about this. Yeah. And this kind of reminds me a little bit of Deflategate. And did the coaching staff know, or is this just some rogue equipment manager? And this time it's Connor Stallions, remarkable name, but sending this out to his army of volunteer spies that are going to these games. And it's hard to believe, it's possible, but that the athletic department would have known about the details of this, given how out in the open this was and how sloppy they were. And a lot of people say the only ones who get caught cheating are the bad cheaters, the ones who are just not very good at hiding it or even attempting to hide it, because these folks were sitting out there in the stands. Everybody could see. He was buying tickets under his name or under family members' names. He was sending money on Venmo, like the not even the private setting, the public setting. Even I don't, if it's just an innocuous payment, I usually put it on private just because I don't want people seeing what I'm spending money on. And so there was no, didn't seem like any real effort to hide this. So it just makes you, makes me wonder, wait a minute, if Harbaugh, who is as passionate and single-minded as he is, would allow this to happen on his watch, or maybe it was just, hey, don't tell me anything about it, just go and do it. And so it's plausible deniability. But it is, as you said, a good old-fashioned NCAA scandal. Yeah. And it's also a scandal that, like you said, you might think the rule is silly and outdated, but it's still the rule. And it's hard to argue that if you were actually doing this and you got caught, that you violated NCAA rules. Now we'll see what the possible punishment is. But do you think that, much like with Spygate and other with the Astros, that do you think Michigan actually got a competitive advantage from this? Is there, because even if you don't send people to the games, it seems like there's other ways to accomplish a similar objective where you're trying to figure out what the other team's plays are. And you hear it all the time where a defensive player will say, we knew their plays, we knew their calls, we were able to anticipate it. Do you think you can get a real advantage from something like this?
Yeah, I think this is all, like you said, competitive advantages in the margins. And I think if they did get one, it was the margins. It wasn't this massive advantage where all these other schools, assuming they're doing it the right way, are looking at TV tape and broadcast film and whatever it is, and they're trying to do it in the live version from the stands, watching it with their binoculars in in section 112.
Yeah.
So the other thing that strikes me, Gabe, is that you mentioned comparing it to someone like Arkansas State is going to have a football operations staff of 3 people. Michigan has a football operations staff of 20. And again, this is not impugning Michigan, but like somebody's got to supervise this guy. Like, it's easy to be rogue if you're at Arkansas State. It's hard to be rogue if you're at Michigan with so much reporting and so many chains and so many people like overseeing everything. Now, you can't just say they're so busy and so many players and they're a top 10 program. No, it just is. It's really this kind of story for a made for TV movie where this guy, Connor, who's got this army background, just like you said, has this coterie of people he calls to go sit in the stands and figure out what Ohio State is calling. Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. And it's also, maybe Kevin James will play Connor Stallions in the movie so we can have just like that awful Sean Payton movie that they made about about the Saints scandal or the alleged scandal. But the fact that Connor Stallions was apparently on the field during games, standing next to the offensive and defensive coordinators during the time when they're actually calling plays, it does make it more difficult to believe that Michigan had no idea what was going on, or the staff had no idea what was going on, because you're limited in who can be on the field. And if you're the head coach, who's standing next to your offensive coordinator, your defensive coordinator, and if this guy all of a sudden has all this really helpful information or as something that the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator are willing to listen to, it raises a lot of burning red flags that there's something more going on here. Now, maybe they thought he was a analytics guru and just somebody who, if anybody can help them, they'll say, all right, we'll take you. We'll help you. Let us show us you can help us, and we'll let you on the field and you can help us. But it is really odd that a program as well-resourced as Michigan would have this going on. And I don't feel a lot of sympathy for Michigan fans, just like people don't feel a lot of sympathy for my alma mater, for Duke, when something happens at Duke, because again, they're Michigan and they've got lots of good stuff going on for them. But it is a bummer if you're a Michigan football fan to have maybe the best team in the country, and now there's this shadow of cheating over it. And even if the coaches didn't know about it, or even if they weren't getting an advantage over it, it does, it does maybe put an asterisk next to whatever success they have. But it's more fun to talk about this type of scandal than lots of other scandals we've seen go on in college sports or pro sports.
So speaking of which, in the same division or conference, We have the Michigan State Mel Tucker situation, which is just awful. And of course, they show a video of Hitler before the Michigan game. So they're a mess.
Yeah, that was apparently a trivia contest run by a third party.
The Northwestern situation with Pat Fitzgerald, and there's a cheerleader lawsuit there. It's just, it's like Michigan, you could have just hidden behind all this.
Yeah.
And now they got their own little thing.
Yeah. And then, of course, Penn State. And so there's all these other massive, bigger scandals. But as you and I have talked about a lot, the NCAA, if they're concerned about anything, just like the NFL, they have to be concerned about the integrity of the game, the fairness of the game, and whether we agree with the rules or disagree with the rules or think the rules are about to be changed and they're going to allow the communications and the headsets. If you violate the rules, you're cheating. And that's, if the NCAA has to enforce anything, it's the conference has to enforce anything, it's the rules of the game to protect against at least what they perceive as somebody getting an unfair advantage, as opposed to all this other stuff, which obviously in a bigger picture are much more significant, but the NCAA may not have jurisdiction or may not have the power to penalize for. And they've gotten into trouble either for trying to do it, and then they've been accused of overreaching, or for not trying to do it, and they've been accused of being powerless. And so they've damned if they do, damned if they don't. And this one, at least, much more squarely in their wheelhouse. Yeah.
And I think what you just pointed out is a lot of what you and I talk about, and we teach about, and all these things going on in the news now, is off-field stuff. And this is a real on-field issue. And when we talk about NFL, we talk a lot of on-field and concussions and rules and the push and everything else. This is one from college that is important. Because if it's just, everyone does it, then we're not going to take it seriously. Having a rule is a rule. And I think at some point, you just have to come back to that. And I even heard one of the promo shows for the games this weekend. Oh yeah, Michigan's got that other stuff going on, but there, look at this game. Look at this quarterback. I'm like, okay, that's what people want to talk about.
Yep. All right. So one other issue sticking with Michigan, there's been lots of talk for as long as Harbaugh has not been coaching in the NFL that he might go back to the NFL or go to the NFL. And there's a thought that if Michigan does get hit with any sort of discipline in potentially in conjunction with the ongoing investigation about recruiting issues during COVID, still not been disciplined now 3 years later. So this is not a fast moving system. So Harbaugh might have plenty of time to jump ship to the NFL, but there's already discussion and the NFL, I forget who from the NFL went on record or maybe it wasn't a record, but it was reported that they wouldn't let Harbaugh evade NCAA discipline by jumping to the NFL. So if he were to be suspended, he was already suspended once, if he were to suspend additional games, that the NFL might enforce that suspension against him and not allow him to play. And there's some precedent with that with Jim Tressel and the coaching side, Terrell Pryor on the playing side. What do you think about that? About one, if it will happen, let's again just assume for sake of argument that they do find that he committed a violation and that he is suspended, but then he does jump to the NFL. Do you think the NFL might try to enforce a suspension, just carrying over the NCAA suspension? And do you think that's something they should be looking to do? So can they do it and then should they do it?
Yeah. First, it's team and then it's league. So if a team decides they want to hire Jim Harbaugh, then it gets to the league and we have that discussion. But as we know, I think people know, last year he did a flirtation. It was Denver and it was Minnesota. And as we know, they both hired coaches and Harbaugh wasn't considered a finalist for either one. Not sure why, but we have been in this kind of Jim Harbaugh, will he or won't he with the NFL for a while. And I sort of sense, I don't know this for sure, I don't have any inside knowledge, that the lack of interest is more from the team side than his side, that there's a sense that he would go back for the right offer, but maybe an offer, and hasn't had that. Now, if we get to that point, then we do get to the precedent of Terrell Pryor and Jim Tressel of pre-NFL employment discipline, where they have to either sit out or some kind of discipline as they enter. What's so interesting is forever, the Pryor thing has seemed to be an outlier because pre-NFL conduct has not been subject to discipline. We know this in my days scouting NFL college players, when coaches would say, yeah, he had this problem, but it won't affect us because Goodell's not going to discipline for something that happened before the draft. Parse was seemingly that one situation because they didn't want to encourage, he was supplemental draft. They didn't want to encourage players to screw up, get in the supplemental draft and get in. So that probably was a one-off. But I know I'm getting a little off topic here, but the discipline policy was redone this year. It's under our noses. No one even knew about it. That does now allow on the player side for pre-NFL conduct being disciplined. That was done under the rug this year, along with kind of removing that NFL personnel, just like players, must be held to a first-class standard and strengthening the policy in light of Deshaun Watson. That really was something like, wait a minute, did the players even know this? Did they fight it? Did they agree to it? But that happened as well this year. But I'm digressing from Harbaugh. I'm not so sure he'll have interest beyond all of what we're discussing. It might have been a ship that sailed already with the NFL.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I guess part of that depends on what happens with this season and how teams who are underperforming do and teams that are on the hot seat. But it is interesting for the NFL. And as you said, the teams could decide in the first instance, look, we're going to sign you, but you're going to have to sit out the first three games just so we can avoid any of this. We don't have to worry about the league coming down and giving you a harsher suspension. But it is, as you said, the Terrell Pryor, Jim Tressel situation does seem like a complete outlier because there have been other cases, Pete Carroll, Reggie Bush, people who left before there were issues and then they were allowed to go directly into the league. And the league has to be careful not to just adopt whatever the NCAA has determined because you have a right to a process in the league. Even coaches have different processes because of the collective bargaining agreement, but setting a precedent that they're just going to adopt the NCAA's findings or the NCAA suspension when the season length is different, the rules are different, and this would have been permissible under NFL rules. Been laughable if you said you can't have, as you said, you can't have advanced scouting and owners looking for competitive advantages. So in some ways, maybe this makes him more attractive because here's a guy who's willing to push the envelope and try to find everything he can to make his team a winner. But
yeah, and I think this team league thing that we both just commented on, I think it's big because as you and I teach our students, commissioner power and who's really the boss, is it the owners? Is it the commissioner? Are the owners pay and hire and fire? The commissioner works for them. So you're telling me some owner is going to have Roger Goodell tell him you can't hire him without a suspension? Like,
right.
The owner's going to say, come on. I mean, for that, come on.
Right.
Like, for me, Roger, I won't hire him, whatever it is, as long as he complied with the Rooney rule and all those things.
Okay. So speaking of team versus league issues, switching from Michigan to an NFL issue and Deshaun Watson. Yeah. And I'll just turn the floor over to you because there's so much to talk about with the precedent he set with his contract, given what happened with him with his off-field issues and also how the team handled it and playing him, not playing him, and now what's happening with his current team and a team that's actually pretty good, minus that gaping hole at quarterback, which they thought was the thing they had filled. So just take any angle you want on this, the implications of that guaranteed contract, the fact that he's not playing, what this means for the Browns, the cap implications, whatever angle you want to take on it.
Yeah, I talked a lot about the past couple of years, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time. In fact, I won't talk anything about his off-field conduct leading up to this, but it's only to say this, which continues to confound me, shake my head, whatever you want to say, in part, and I would say in large part, due to his misconduct, he created the perfect storm for his contract. And what I mean by that is the Houston Texans, where he was a member during that bad behavior, didn't want him. And so they put basically up for bid, up for auction, a young, productive, ascending quarterback. You can never get those. Like in the NFL, you can never get those. They're never free. I signed Brett Favre 3 years before free agency. I signed Aaron Rodgers 4 years before free agency. You're never going to have that. So here he was, and you had four teams And Cleveland was the only Northern team, and they were out. And all of a sudden, they were not only not out compared to New Orleans, Atlanta, and Carolina, they were in. And the reason they were in is they gave them the best contract in NFL history. Everyone knows it now. Fully secured $230 million contract over 5 years, like an NBA, like a Major League Baseball contract. No contingencies, fully guaranteed. Year one, they even protected him from a pending suspension by making $46 million, only $1 million of it in salary, which is subject to forfeiture due to suspension, and $45 million of it not subject to suspension because bonuses are not. So he made $45.5 million in the year he was suspended most of the year. On the field, he comes back, doesn't play well last year. We all can give him a break for that. He was off most of the year doing whatever he was doing. Comes back this year, had actually his best game, and then he was hurt. We didn't know how much. He didn't play. Then there was a bye. So we expected, okay, he'll be back. But he's not back. And now we're 3 weeks into after the bye. No one knows the full story, and it's very, you're treading on dangerous ground when you're saying, is he really hurt? What's going on? But I will make this point as an expert on the business of these contracts in football, is that I would think if he didn't have that contract, he'd be pushed to play harder than he is being pushed. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he's being pushed at all. But it seems like everything is in negotiations in life is about leverage. And he has the leverage here with that contract. And when you have the leverage, you can say, no, I'm not ready. I'm not ready. And what are they going to do? He is not only that the contract leverage, but he's their franchise. And yes, they're doing well and they have a good defense, but they're putting out there these quarterbacks that can't win. So I don't know what's going on. He says, of course I want to play, but does he? In truth serum, are the Cleveland doctors saying you can't play? I don't think they are. So what we have is this sort of conflict where I look at it as business, and his business is winning over their business, because what are they going to do? Tell him he's got to play when he has 3.5 years left of the best contract in NFL history, which they willingly and gladly and groveled to give him? So that's where I see we are.
Yeah, it is remarkable, given how controversial and how critical people were of the signing, given all the off-field stuff that we don't need to talk about now because it's been talked about so much. And then for this to happen, you think maybe he's going to be rusty. Maybe his skill deteriorated. Maybe who knows what. But now to have this uncertainty around why he's not playing, and living here in New Orleans, totally different player, totally different issue. But we dealt with something similar last year in Zion Williamson, where you just say, here's this franchise guy that the city, the team has invested in, and he's not playing, and it's not clear why he's not playing. Is it because the player doesn't want to play, because the training staff's telling him not to play? And it's a difficult position for everybody to be in, and somebody knows, and they're just not able to talk about it, and there's two sides to every story. But it is, again, as a lifelong Jets fan, I empathize with Browns fans that it is difficult pulling for a team that seems to continually find a way to not perform well, despite the ending of that Jets game this weekend.
Speaking of the Jets, and I'm just bringing in my experience here, we're not going to, I think Jimmy Johnson said this years ago, it's a democracy, but it's not equal. Yep. You're not going to treat, I did not treat Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers the way I treated everyone else. You just don't. So I get it. This is business, and it's a star-driven business, and the stars make your business. And yeah, did I get other players saying, how come you let Brett's family or Aaron's agent or Aaron's friends in the locker room and you don't let mine? I'm like, I don't think I need to answer that. This is the guy who drives the product. And we are going to treat them differently. And I think that's going on with Zion, obviously, and going on with Deshaun Watson. The question is, can a general manager or someone in leadership position cut through the deflection? And what I mean by that is have an honest conversation without worrying so much about pissing off the player, worrying so much about the agent. Oh, what happens when we go back to him? We need something. Worrying so much about the atmosphere. And I sense that's what's going on. Oh, we can't piss off Deshaun. We can't piss him off. Let's just let this ride for a while. And I do have to take issue with Deshaun saying to the media, you think I don't want to play? How would I not want to play 2021 in Houston? He didn't play. Now, maybe the team signed off on that, but he was healthy. He was healthy all year, made his money, millions and millions of dollars. So there's some history there.
Yeah. And it, from the fans' perspective, it is so frustrating because there's so much information about every little thing that gets out there. And it's so hard to keep any secrets, at least that we know of, because that's why they're, otherwise they wouldn't be secrets. But then you have this, where you have the face of the franchise and the most player-friendly contract in history of the sport, and we don't know what's going on. It's, again, it was similar to Zion, where some of the frustration was, just tell us what's happening. Right. Like, well, why is it just, we'll reevaluate in 2 weeks, we'll reevaluate in 4 weeks? And it's a no-win situation, because the fans are not going to be happy no matter, they're not going to be happy. Right. Even if you tell them, they're still going to be upset. But it's not that you broke up with me, it's how you broke up with me. The fact that you did break up with me. But if you don't do it in a sort of transparent way, now back to not breaking up with people, but reporting about your star players, it just gives the fans another reason to be upset. And, yeah. But it's a difficult position for the Browns to be in.
All right, let's go. On the Browns, it's been conflicting personally for me, because they have a general manager who's got a great first name, Andrew Berry, who actually came from the Eagles, but has Harvard background. Great. I'm impressed with him. I really like him. We've gotten to know each other when he was in Philly. And they have a coach, speaking of Philly, very Philly guy, Stefanski, whose dad was the GM of the Sixers at one point, the AD at Penn, spends his summers on the Jersey Shore. I know these guys pretty well. And it's tough for me to be critical of the Browns, because you love the people. I don't know the owner, so I can say that.
Yep.
But yeah, it's always conflicting talking about that.
Speaking of conflicting, I haven't asked you, and I know you can't really answer this, but Aaron Rodgers, are we going to see him back on the field this year? Not just wink once if it's a yes.
I don't know how good that ayahuasca is doing with the Achilles. It's the little snippets you get on the field. I think he's been pretty honest with McAfee. He's got to progress to this. I'm a little more surprised, and this is making you happy, that there's still a discussion about that he could actually, there could actually be a playoffs for him to play in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because I thought that was pie in the sky to begin with. Yeah. And they are one of those teams you get every year. Like, there's, you know better than I do, there's two or three games where, like, wait a minute, they won that game? And like yesterday, how did they win the game? How in the world did they win that game?
Yeah. I will tell you, if they had lost the game, which they should have, it really would have been, how do you lose a game when your opposing quarterback throws only one, attempts one pass in the second half? It's remarkable. Yeah. But all right, putting that aside, a couple other quick hitters on the NFL. Roger Goodell, who for a period of time was one of the most disliked figures in professional sports, and was the bullseye, the target of a lot of attacks from different fan bases and owners and players, and has shown remarkable resiliency, because it's not that I think he's particularly popular now amongst the fans, and I don't think the league cares whether he's popular amongst the fans, but he's had his contract re-extended. He's going to have made, you're the business of sports Hall of Fame guy. Yeah. What will his total earnings have been through the end of this contract?
There's a report by Front Office Sports. I don't know if it'll be exactly, but roughly $700 million, which is twice as much as any player in NFL history. And let me just say this. We just talked about this. Commissioners do what owners want. He's the only, as we know so well, the only non-lawyer commissioner of the major four sports. He's the business guy. He came up in the sponsorship licensing department of the NFL. Is an in-house guy for 30-something years, from the mailroom to the licensing department and on his way. And he knows how to make a money. He was the guy doing the deals with Verizon and doing the sponsorship deal with Pepsi. That was him. And now he's commissioner for past 20 years. I will, and I think he's very non-revealing. He's corporate. He's bland. He has the robotic image that people don't like. But I can say from my experience at the Packers, he's got a human side. He would come, especially when some players go through some issues, and he'd want a private room to meet with them. And I sat in a couple. Like, wow, there's a human side there. And I think the owners, not him, don't want him to show that too much, right? They want that corporate, strong-jawed. So he's got the extension, which is a no-brainer. I'm guessing like $64 million a year, which is $2 million per team. It's a lot easier to negotiate with 32 people than one. And I'm guessing, yeah, that's about, he's made $600 to $700 million. But Gabe, look at the three metrics. Number one, $110 billion in media contracts coming in. Number two, the recent franchise sale, most recent, $6 billion. And the most team-friendly CBA in major sports for the next 8 years at least. They're looking at that, the owners, and saying, Jesus, how much do you want? Because these numbers are just skyrocketing. And every week, this game most ever watched, this game most ever watched, Amazon game most ever watched. You just get desensitized to all that.
So speaking of the TV deals and Amazon in particular, we can end on this, but actually two things. One, the longevity, his longevity, and this is just showing our age more than anything else, but it is pretty remarkable to me that Roger Goodell has now served a longer tenure than his predecessor, Paul Tagliabue, because it seemed like Paul Tagliabue was there forever and was just the face of the NFL. And it's amazing, just the passage of time. And for fans who are in their 30s or below, think of Roger Goodell and the NFL. But on the TV deals and streaming and everything we're seeing now, not affecting the NFL, because with regional sports networks, it's not an NFL issue because they don't have these local TV broadcasts, these local TV deals like the NBA, Major League Baseball, and NHL have. But the potential collapse of the regional sports network and the maybe move back towards direct to consumer from the teams or the leagues taking these rights in-house. And the NFL obviously has all these rights through the national television deal. The Amazon experiment, it seems to have been a success. Do you think we're going to shift even more towards streaming and then with YouTube TV taking over for DirecTV? Where do you see things shaking out? And is it fair to say that the Amazon experiment has been a success and we're going to see more streaming rather than less streaming in the future?
Yes, but not for 10 years. We've got the deals.
Right.
The deals are set with ESPN, with Fox, with CBS. And then Thursday night owned by Amazon, and then, of course, YouTube for Sunday Ticket. But I think the NFL will be the last bastion, and maybe already is, of free TV. But there'll be more. There's little notes we haven't talked about, like the NFL is going to have a playoff game that's going to be streaming only. They're going to have a December game that's going to be just streaming only. They have dipped their toe now with this Amazon thing, and it's working, like you said. Network-like numbers, 13 million a week for Thursday night football, 17 million a week for Sunday football now, which is, no one gets that. No programming around ever gets that. World Series is going to be 9 million. It just shows you how big it is. I know we have a lot of lawyers and law students. Quick thing on Tagliabue and Goodell. When I was in the NFL under Tagliabue as a lawyer, he's a very skilled lawyer from Covington and Burling, and he was the discipline issue, we talked about this a couple times in this podcast. When we had a player that had some issues or had a domestic issue or had a off-field issue, we would have to decide what's our future here, what's going to happen. With Tagliabue, a lawyer, he was okay, it's going to wend its way through the court system and then he renders some kind of discipline or not. Say we had a player that had a domestic issue in October, and he gets a court date in February. All right, we're good. And that's not an easy way to look at it as a lawyer, but he's playing for us. We had a situation right away with Goodell, right away, first year, 2007. And we had an issue in training camp. One of our best players, Goodell, 2 weeks later, the guy's suspended for seven games, six games, whatever it was. Well, wait, what about legal process and court and lawyers. Nope. So I learned right away there's a new sheriff in town. He looked at police reports, talked to a couple of people. That was it. So again, we have lawyers and law students listening to us. It's just a different way of doing things. Where if you're a commissioner, you can decide, hey, best interest of the game, conduct detrimental. I'm not going to look at all the lawyers get involved here. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. And Tagliabue and everybody before him had the benefit of not being in a social media world for the most part. True. And so there weren't people hanging on every development and every court case and getting access to all this information. And so things were just have been tried so much more in the public eye than they were back then. So you could move a little more slowly because everything moved more slowly then. But you're absolutely right. We knew from the moment Roger Goodell got there and the way he handled most of these cases that he was going to be stricter on conduct, and that this was going to be, whether that was him wanting to do that or whether that was, as you talked about, the owners wanting him to do that or some combination of the two, there was clearly a difference there. And there's that age old question, does the league wait for the legal system to play out or legal process to play out, or do they just jump ahead because they don't have to wait for the legal process because they have their own rules and they're a private association. They don't have to deal with evidentiary issues and burdens of proof like our court system does. And it's still, there's not a clear right answer to that. And we remember coming out of the Ray Rice scandal and the Peter Mueller report and the question where a lot of people said the NFL should wait for the criminal justice system to play out. And Peter Mueller said, no, stop being so deferential to the criminal justice system. You should do your own investigation. And so the NFL beefed up its investigatory staff. And it's still shocking to hear somebody say the NFL should be more responsible for policing and investigating domestic violence than our law enforcement system. Yeah. It says more about our law enforcement system in some ways than it does about anything else. But
I know
it is remarkable how far we've come from, I don't even remember now what year Ray Rice was, but 14. Okay. So that was only 10 years ago, 9 years ago. And just thinking about 20 years ago, how different the world was and how different our expectations were on sports leagues, on issues other than drug abuse, right? And steroid abuse in baseball. That was the big issue for so long. And now it's, I guess the bottom line is just we're old, Andrew. We've seen a lot now at this point. We've seen all these changes. Before I let you go.
Dave, not whatever it is. Not biologically, chronologically, maybe.
Wait, we are old chronologically, but not biologically?
Yeah,
have you stopped?
We're old because of the number by our name, but
I see.
We're not old physically or whatever. You know what I'm trying to say.
I do.
We're fit. We're healthy. Hanging out with young people all day. Yeah,
we are. Name is number is just a number.
Just a number.
You know what it is. Just a number. Age is just a number. See, yeah, now we got it.
Yeah.
All right. Tell everybody where they can read your stuff, find your stuff. For those of you who don't know, Andrew is the best in the business when it comes to tackling sports business issues and also sports legal issues. And he's seen it from all sides. So where can people read and hear your work? And can you tell people where you're headed in the next couple of days? Or you don't have to tell us.
Yeah, I'll tell them. Yeah. My channels include a podcast, The Business of Sports. I do a newsletter every week. So you can sign up at andrew-brandt.com. Comes to your inbox every Sunday morning, free of charge. The columns are at Sports Illustrated every other week on the business of football, and my day job at Villanova, like Gabe, running a sports law program, Villanova School of Law. And if you guys are watching the video, on my right is the World League helmet. I was general manager of the Barcelona Dragons. I am headed on Thursday morning to Frankfurt, Germany, where we are having a reunion of the NFL Europe and World League people around the Chiefs Dolphins Frankfurt Germany game, which happens to be the best matchup of the year happening in Germany. So it'll be quite a whirlwind. Taking my son, we're gonna have a great time and see Germany for 3 days and enjoy the game and meet some people over there that I haven't seen in years and years.
All right, have a great time, have a great trip. Our recent podcast guest, Oliver Luck, as I understand, we'll also be out there with you. So say hello to Oliver for us. Safe travels. And when Aaron Rodgers returns for the AFC Championship game this year, Andrew, I'll have you back on the pod so you can break down what all that's going to look like.
The Super Bowl against the Packers.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you so much, Andrew. Be well.
Always
talk to you soon. Thank you all for listening. And thank you to my sponsor, the Tulane Center for Sport. See you all next time on Sportswise.